broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth podcast with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. This is Matt Sorensen. It's a pleasure to be with you today. And as you know, or if you're new, this show is all about helping you save taxes, protect your assets, and build your wealth. And today, we're just hoping to, you know, refresh that bucket just one more time. That's what we strive to do every week.
Good play on words, my fellow commentator here. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, flew from the streams of refreshment.
Yeah, we don't have a script, folks. This is just, you know, pure, you know, just genius, Matt Sorensen. Now, our topic today, if you saw it there on the title there on your podcast portal, whatever your flavor may be, iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, yada, yada, Spotify. The title is Hard Money. We're going to talk about hard money and the topic of how to maybe make money in the hard money industry, where you might use it in real estate. I want to give a little more of an introduction of the topic here as we get close to introducing our guest. But we've got Bruce Norris, not Chuck Norris. I mean, Chuck, I'm a fan. I love Chuck. But this is Bruce Norris, a.k.a. the hard money real estate expert nationwide the Norris Group, from the Norris Group. He's great. We'll introduce him a little later, but I think this is a really good topic.
Yeah, and Bruce has a lot of good analysis on the state of the real estate market. We're going to ask him whether we're in a bubble right now and get a lot of good insight from him. Because if you're in the hard money lending business, which is, you know, you're basically a private lender, you're lending your own money out to other people on real estate deals typically. If you're in that world, you got to know the real estate market of where you're lending. And so we're going to try and get some insights from Bruce on that as well. So but if you're listening and you're new to the show, just keep in mind, you can go to refreshyourwealth.com, sign up for our free weekly newsletter. We've always got an amazing newsletter going out. I've got, you know, personally, I got a good article in there. We've got one from Nolan in our office that was really good on this opportunity zone, new tax package that was part of the tax reform. One of these little juicy nuggets that came out. That's really big for real estate. We want people to be reading up on, and we'll be giving more info on. So there's just a wealth of information we're trying to get out there to you, the listeners, and our clients to just better help you save on taxes and manage your wealth.
I love it. I love it. Now, for you regular listeners, and hopefully this is a huge bonus to this show, is we try to create a little variety, and we do a tax and legal tip every week. And that way there's something that hopefully you can take away and use no matter what the core topic of the show is about. And Matt, may I kick it off with a tax tip? Are you okay with that?
Yeah, the tax man always gets to go first.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Wow, I feel honored.
The tax man? Yeah, that's more of an insult, but usually.
What? I didn't take that as an insult. I was like ready to go, man.
Well, just that frame. I mean, you know, I say it in jest because Mark Kohler is, you know, in my world, you know, Mark Kohler, he's at the top.
Well, when you say tax man, you're probably thinking of an IRS agent. So tax man, but no, I'm the save tax man. You
know, that's the key operative phrase there. I left that out.
Totally different. Yeah. Jeez. Not the
pay your tax to the man guy. Okay.
Okay. All right. Let's hit our riff.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Okay, everybody. Now, today's tip is kind of financial and tax related. I've had several phone calls the last week where this seemed to be a big theme. And I was a little surprised my clients were asking these questions or so concerned about it. And I want to talk about bank accounts. I know that sounds maybe simplistic, but it's very, very, very important to your overall tax plan, your asset protection plan, and your sanity plan. It's funny, when we're setting up
multiple... Often overlooked.
Yes, yeah. We got a sanity plan. So I was working with a client this week, and we were setting up a couple LLCs, and then they had their operational entity, and then there was husband, wife, and then they had a couple kids, and we, you know, by the time you started adding up all the bank accounts of the different individual accounts and then the business accounts, we were at about 8 to 9 checking accounts, and the client just started to lose it. They're like, oh my gosh, all these bank accounts. I'm like, what? That's not the perspective you should have. You should be grateful for these bank accounts. These bank accounts will set you free. This is where separate accounting and separation from personal and business gives you asset protection, and it makes your life easier. I want in your wallet, your purse, I want separate debit cards, and you use those debit cards for different things. And as soon as you adopt that strategy, it sets you free. Your bookkeeping is easier. Your tax savings is easier. Your accounting fees are cheaper. And your asset protection is better because you're keeping your operations into different checkbooks. Now, for example, these couple LLCs we set up had a couple rentals in them. Well, these two rentals in LLC A were in one bucket, and then another couple rentals were in LLC B. Well, the A rentals, those tenants write their check to LLC A. Then the B rentals, they're writing their checks to LLC B, and they're two different checkbooks. They pay their own mortgages. They pay their own property taxes and da, 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 da. And when you're paying your bills, you've got a couple checkbooks in the drawer. And when it's time to do accounting, you got a bank statement that says, you know, that really gives you 90% of the story. So whether it's an operational business or a rental property LLC, or just your own personal account or the kids account, and when you pay your kids out of the little management company or something, a great video in the newsletter this week, those bank accounts will actually give you more sanity and confidence, save you money, make you money. So I guess my tip is today, don't be afraid of more bank accounts. Embrace them. Have good banking organization. That's the foundation of a good accounting system, is having a good banking system. Ooh, Matt, that sounded good. I got to write that down.
Yeah, you better write that down.
I better write that down, damn it. Okay, foundation. Okay.
And today's podcast is brought to you by the American Bankers Association.
Yes. Who I hate.
Yeah. Who wants you to have many, many bank accounts. Well, that's a great tip. I think, Cal, I've seen that. And I always try to reinforce that with clients of, this actually does make your life easier. As myself, with all the different entities I've got going and things, man, it simplifies things. And you know what also does is it helps for better financial management, because if you got rental properties and you got other things going on, businesses, and you're running that out of one bank account, you don't know where the money's drained out of. But if I got some rental properties in one LLC and other businesses in others, it's pretty clear which one I'm dumping money into every month and which one's not performing financially. You know, and so it's another way to just more easily track how you're doing financially by separating out those bank accounts. And even if you suck at doing bookkeeping, man, the bank account that needs money every month is the one that's not doing well. It's that simple.
Yeah. And if you turn to your bookkeeper, your accountant at the end of the year and go, help me with my books, the first thing they're going to ask for is, give me your bank statements.
Well, I didn't run it through the bank account, or I used cash, or I did this, and I've got 3 different credit cards, and then I paid for my underwear on this one and my cruise here, and I bought my grandma a present here, and oh my gosh, now buckle up. So now those bank accounts don't sound too bad, do they? So everybody, the sooner you adopt a good banking system, your accounting system will just flourish.
Oh, yeah.
Exciting.
Love it.
Good stuff. Woo. All right. Okay. Legal man. That's from the legal man.
Legal I'm the law.
Yep.
You're the law. I'm the law. Lawman. You call me lawman.
Longmire for sheriff right there. Longmire for sheriff.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Well, let's hit the legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, this legal tip kind of relates to today's show about hard money. It might be a little tip that can apply to those in the hard money lending world. I had a consult with a client recently, a pretty sophisticated client who did a private loan, or could be a hard money loan, on a piece of real estate that was essentially a rehab, fix and flip type deal. And the loan was put into second position. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened here, and I want to talk about just some strategies and ways you got to think about this. And if you're loaning in second position, what that means is she loaned money to the borrower. The borrower got a mortgage from a traditional bank or other lender that was in first position that was used to buy the house. And that person gets first right. If that first person mortgage isn't paid first, or sorry, first position mortgage isn't paid first, they get a foreclosed. And anyone else that's owed money on the deal after them gets wiped out. So here's my client here at second position who funded money for the rehab essentially. And now if that first position doesn't get paid again, which is end up what happened here, first position gets in default. The deal goes bad. There's apparently now third position lenders, even behind my client, that had to put money in on the deal. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is, I just want to make sure, and this is really the tip, is understand where you are in position when you're loaning money on someone's real estate deal in particular, or maybe you're loaning money on to their business and securing it against their real estate that they own. Of course, absolutely make sure you get a mortgage or deed of trust recorded against the property. That's the lien essentially on that real estate. And know where you are in title. Now this client knew where they were. They knew they were in second. But of course, you realize if you're in second, you're not in control, and there's two people that are in control before you are: the borrower, obviously, and the mortgage lender that's ahead of you. Now, the mortgage lender that's ahead of you, if they're not getting paid, what's their motivation? If they foreclose and they're going to go to a trustee's cell, what do you think they're going to ask for at the trustee's cell to pay off their bid? They're going to ask for what they're owed. So if they're owed, let's say $500,000 on the property and the property is worth $600,000, and they go to a trustee cell and they're going to foreclose, what's their opening bid? $500,000. If someone gives us $500,000, we will sell this property, wipe out everyone else, and we're done. We're cool. I don't care if someone's in second. What do I care? Yeah. The property's worth $600,000. Should I take the bid up to $525,000 to $550,000? I don't care. So that's what we were talking about with this client, is make sure that they know if this property is going to bid, because there is some equity there. If the first position does go, make sure you're active at that auction, because there is some actual equity in the property. So just be careful on where you are in position. Realize if you're not in first position, you're not in control anymore. Yeah. And, you know, you got to play these games.
The life lessons are so deep here. I mean, this
they are. Yeah. Are you going to give a dating analogy here?
I am. I'm going to throw down another one because you... Matt, do you want to be in second?
I love these, actually. Yeah. Actually, like these.
So if you're, some of you single folks out there, you do not want to be in second position. You want to be the first auto dial on your boyfriend or girlfriend's phone. If you're in second position, I mean, that's tough. You got to step up to the plate in a big way if you want to be in first position. I mean, one might even argue, your spouse is first position, and you don't want any second position lenders out there. Yeah. You don't want any affairs going on with second or third position. Nope. Keep first position happy.
That's right. That's that's where you can find success.
Yeah.
And if you're a lender out there, you don't want to get into a second position deal. This is not good.
You're not in control. I mean, you're not.
And there's people that do it. And obviously, the deals, you got to analyze the deals and be more careful. And we'll get into some of the questions with our expert, Bruce Norris, on the topic. There's just more risk, obviously, there. You're in less control, and you got to make sure there's enough equity there and you got someone doing a deal that knows what the heck they're doing.
Yeah. Well, okay. Now, before we introduce our special guest, I get to introduce him here, but I want to make a comment. Matt, you might be able to help us here, is that I want to kind of just mention the players here. So when we go into this conversation of hard money, any of you that are regular listeners of ours, and you might be like, what's this hard money thing all about? There's really three parties we're talking about. Let me define these parties. You've got a borrower, someone that needs money for a deal. They are up against the wall, Wells Fargo or Chase or, whoever, KeyBank, they're not going to give them money. So they're stuck. They need money.
This is typically a real estate investor. Who's got a real estate deal? They got a property they want to fix and flip. Mm-hmm. They need financing.
Yeah. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are long gone. They don't want to talk to you. So you're stuck and you need, and you're willing to pay more interest and points, which we'll explain. But you're a borrower in need of money. Then on the other extreme, you've got a lender. You got some fat cat, some guy or gal that have saved up a lot of money, maybe in their retirement account, maybe in their personal accounts and funds. It could be equity in their home or whatever, but they've got some sitting on some cash and they don't really want to buy a rental property. They don't want to be a landlord. They'd rather be a banker and they want to loan money. And so they're looking for someone desperate that needs to borrow money and they're willing to pay a higher interest rate. But they also want to be careful. They want to place their money somewhere wise. That's the lender. Then Matt, we got a broker in the middle. What's this broker do? Why don't you tell him?
Well, the broker is someone who can essentially, you know, the matchmaker, so to speak. Mm. This is maybe the Tinder of the dating world.
Man, we're full of analogies, man.
You know, Match.com for the, you know, the older crowd, the Tinder for the dozen millennial listeners.
Swipe. Yep.
Yeah. So you see what deals you want. You go swipe left, swipe right, or however that works.
Yeah. I don't know how it works because I'm married. Yeah. I don't know. Swipe left. Yeah. Right. I don't even swipe.
Yeah. I just know the jokes. That's all I know. And so, geez. So that's the broker. You know, they're essentially in the middle here and helping connect the borrower who needs money to a lender who has it. And sometimes the broker puts in their own money. But the broker will essentially help vet the deal. If you're the person that wants to lend money, they can be a good resource to help vet the deal, particularly where if you're new to this, that can be a very, very valuable thing. Learn what they do. Now, some people are like, well, I don't have the time. I don't have the deal flow. I need a broker to help me. And that's what Bruce does and their company does. And there's others out there. But some people might be, you know what? I want to get some training wheels on maybe. I want to go through some deals, use a broker. Then maybe after I won't need a broker. And so maybe you want to go at your own later on. But a broker can be useful in helping you source deals, also helping you find deals. And that's another thing as I've seen people go in the private lending market is you need to get the deal flow. You know, you need to find a good deal and don't just lend on the one deal you hear about at a real estate meeting. You know, that let's analyze a couple of deals. Be choosy, you know. You got to swipe left on a couple of these before you go right. Don't just take the first one.
Yeah. Matt, powerful life lessons there. So good. So good. All right. Okay. Well, let's get to our special guest.
Buckle up. It's time to refresh you listeners. Mark and Matt have hand-selected professionals from around the world. From successful businesses, personal stories, or hard-hitting tips and tricks, please welcome today's Refresh Your Wealth guest.
Well, it's my honor to introduce our special guest today. We've already kind of primed the engine, if you will, throughout the first half of the show, talking about our amazing guests that we expect to have. So he's on the line with us now. We have Bruce Norris of the Norris Group. Matt and I have known Bruce at least 8 to 10 years. He has proven himself as a really sound, credible voice in the real estate industry over the years. Of course, his specialty is primarily that of the hard money industry within real estate, but he really just knows the real estate market. Because if you're going to do hard money, you better freaking know your real estate market or else you're going to get hosed, for lack of a better PC word. So I'm just going to leave it at that and just say we truly have an expert with us that understands hard money, the real estate market, generally West Coast, but I know nationwide. So we've got a lot of good questions for him today. We're excited to have him here. If you are a regular listener of our show and do any real estate at all, I know you're going to find some important takeaways today. So from the Norris Group, welcome, Bruce. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, Mark. We appreciate the invitation.
Well, all right. Well, since I got to do the glorious introduction, Matt, you're going to throw him a fastball or a softball to start out because Bruce can handle it.
Well, I know he can handle it. He has a black belt in karate from what I understand. So he's not the only Norris kicking butt out there.
Yeah, that's right. We know that. It's touche.
All right. Well, Bruce has a lot of credentials, frankly, and I'm thankful to have you on, Bruce, but we want to talk about a couple of different things and let's maybe talk about just hard money lending in first. And I think for a lot of people, you know, hard money lending, this is private money lending. Essentially, a lot of people are doing this in the real estate market. Maybe you can give us a quick example of how someone can make money doing hard money lending, so to speak? And what's the typical person doing to try and make money doing
that? Yeah, and if I may add to that, is give us a definition of the classic hard money transaction. I just like, if you're talking to someone at a dinner party and they've never even heard of hard money, give us that definition first. And then, as Matt said, elaborate on that as to.
But answer my question first and then Mark's next.
No, my question first.
A typical hard money loan is done for a product that probably wouldn't pass the qualification standards of a normal lender. So you go into a house and it doesn't have a kitchen. Normal lender's not going to do that. A hard money lender, that's where we live. Okay. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that do the projects we've done business with for the last, 25 years, and we're their banking partner. Basically, that's what it is. So there is a niche of new people. What's really interesting about the private investor, let's say the guy that has the $3 million he wants to place, it's a terrible mistake, in my opinion, to go directly to the project with that money. The reason is you try very hard to say yes because you want to keep your money busy. Mm-hmm. As opposed to a broker, if you sat in my office for one day, you'd go home and you would say, my God, they say no a lot. And that's what's really not the opinion most people have of hard money. Some hard money lenders will get up and talk in front of a club and say, mm-hmm. credit doesn't matter, money in doesn't matter, just whatever. It's so easy to get the loan. Well, no, it isn't. We actually have standards that work for us. It has not so much to do with FICO scores. It has to do with knowledge of the industry, getting through projects that are similar that you're about to take on with my money, mm-hmm. and having reserves. We want people to have reserves. So we don't do nothing down loans, and we don't do loans to people that don't have 30% extra in the bank for every loan dollar we fund. So, if we're funding a 300 grand loan, you're going to have 90 grand left over in the bank. We're going to pass.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let me summarize an example, because we do have our listenership, Bruce, is not solely real estate. So a lot of people have never heard of this concept. So I want to just tidy up that example you gave of someone wanting to do a kitchen. So if you're going to go out and buy a home for typically a fix and flip, and I'll explain why in 2 seconds. But if you're going to buy a house, fix it up, you watch the Fixer Up show, you love Chip and down in Texas, knocking it out of the park. And so you're like, I'm going to buy a little fixer upper. So you may even have your own money, or you partner with someone, or you borrow some IRA, you put your IRA into it or whatever, or you get a bank to give you the primary loan to buy the house. You need extra money to do the rehab. And so you find a hard money lender that's going to come in a second position, I believe.
Which we don't do, by the way.
You don't even do second position. You just want first.
Yeah. And that's just from history of being in the business for 2.5 decades. You're pushing the leverage to a point where you're the one that's going to get hurt.
Okay.
So you've got somebody that needs a second. Well, we'd rather not do that loan. We'd rather do the loan to the person that doesn't need a second. We're the first. I'm not really interested in doing a 40 grand loan for repairs behind a 250 grand bank loan. And we charge 2 points and make $800 and take all the risk. I'm not interested in that.
Okay. Now, are there hard money lenders that will come in and loan that?
They usually, I would think, will be a hybrid. They would be the first and maybe a higher interest, a second, something like that. Okay. But it's possible. All of this, by the way, is non-owner occupied properties. The occupied properties we have no interest in, and really the hard money loan industry in general has no interest in, which is kind of funny because you think, okay, that sounds backwards. You think owner occupancy real estate is more dangerous, and the answer is yes. The only reason they would come to a hard money loan company to borrow at hard money loan rates for an owner occupied property is there is absolutely no other option. They've been told no mm-hmm. from the normal financial world. And usually you're bailing out a problem with the money, but the problem still exists. Only now on top of that is your payment, and you would have a very high delinquency rate. Yeah. It's just not a loan business we're interested in. It's a tough model.
Yeah. There's a lot of loan products and government programs and all these for people to buy a home. But once you get into the investment real estate world, particularly in the smaller investment properties, single family, stuff like that, that's where there seems to be a big vacuum. The banks really don't care to lend on it. The big commercial lenders aren't excited about it. I think that's where the quote unquote hard money lending industry really thrives. So you're loaning a lot on firsts. And of course, as Mark mentioned, there could be people loaning on seconds. Let's say I've got a real estate deal. Let's say I've got a deal I want to do. I need some hard money. What are the terms I should expect? Like what am I paying for that money? What terms should I be expecting as I'm trying to get a hard money loan if I'm on the borrower end?
Yeah. I would say it's much more competitive than it used to be. When I was borrowing lots of money before I started the Norris Group, I was paying 5 points, 12.5% interest. And not batting an eye, because I was buying everything at 50% or less. So I just wanted access to money. So it was not a big deal. Mm-hmm. Now, 2 points, 8.9% interest. That's for a 1 year where you're going to fix and flip it. Mm-hmm. No prepayment on the paying it off early. That's a really good rate. We even have a private rental program that's 6.9%, and that's for 3 years. And that's private money, so that's really a good rate.
Okay,
still 6.9.
Competitors are all over the map. You know, you can have some of them that do more aggressive lending. So if you're having a lender doing really aggressive lending, they may charge more points. They may charge you 4 points, but they'll do 100% of purchase price, put the repairs in a second. And once again, it's a little bit difficult to want to be the trusted investor in those scenarios where people don't have one thin dime in the deal.
Okay. Now I'm going to be the continued voice of simplicity here in the show. And that's okay. This is all good because we've got complex listeners and listeners that are just dipping their toe into this real estate world. So don't turn off the podcast show yet. This is important. So I want to clarify a couple points. The reason why you don't use hard money to buy a rental property is because you're paying a higher interest rate. It's harder to cash flow a rental property. You're going to get a long-term financing situation. And if you can't get long-term financing to buy a rental, you're buying the wrong freaking rental, people. Now, if you're going to go do a fix and flip, then hard money is okay because you don't mind paying a little bit more in interest because it's generally a short-term loan, maybe a year or up to three, like Bruce said. And then you can turn it around quickly, sell the property, pay off your lender, and you've got this high margin turnover property that you're hoping to make some good profit. And I just want to say one last thing is this points scenario. For some of you that are out there going, what does he mean points? So if I borrow $100,000, 2 points means $2,000. So I've got to pay $2,000 plus interest to get that loan. And Bruce, let me ask, do you pay that points up front, on the back, in the middle, along the way? How does the payment plan work on all this?
You know, that would vary from lender to lender. We get points up front. We make everybody pay a monthly payment. You're just asking for trouble doing it any other way. So let's say, I've got pooled money is really a dangerous term in the wrong hands. Pooled money is you got $5 million in a pool, and today you happen to have $1 million of it not being used. So do you do what you always normally do and wait for that loan program that is comfortable to you, or do you say, well, you know what, just this once we'll push the money out so we get it busy again? And that's where problems come in. So you're aggressive this time. You say, okay, all right, for this loan, no payments for 6 months, and we won't collect the points till the back end.
I got it.
And we'll fund you 100%, and pretty soon you find out, wow, we found out 6 months too late the guy doesn't have a dime, and we're in trouble.
Yep. Now I've got a good analogy here. This is important because this relates to last week's show. I've got a dating analogy. Folks, some of you may be at home on the weekends, really lonely, thinking, man, I'm lonely. I gotta get out there. But your standards are pretty high. And you're like, I gotta wait for that perfect date. And but you drop your standards, you go out with someone on a weekend because you're lonely, and all of a sudden you got problems. Now, Bruce, that's the same principle. You've got all these borrowers that want to borrow money from you, and you're like, nah, you're not good enough. And then your money's sitting there, and you're like, oh my gosh, I got to get it out there and make some interest. And you drop your standards, and you got this bozo you're working with now. You've done this, haven't you? You've lived this.
Are you asking me that?
Yes.
I mean, Bruce, don't fall into his trap here.
No.
I won't.
No, what I mean is Bruce being in the business this long and me being in my short life of real estate and all that, we all make mistakes, you know, and I'm glad that Bruce is talking about a classic mistake in hard money lending is you're a lender and you choose a lower quality project because you just want to get your money to work. That's your point, right? So you got to keep your standards high.
Yes, it is.
All right.
And that's my point too. When money chases in investors directly, there's not a broker in between with tons of experience that knows red flags to look at. So if you're a private investor with money and you say, I don't need a broker to find me deals. Yeah, you probably do because they say no a lot and they go through the pile and you probably get to see a third of the pile and they toss 70% out the window. And I would bet money that if you saw the whole pile, you wouldn't get the half of the pile before you were fully funded.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask on terms. I've just seen some different deals come together for clients over the years. And one thing I see on annual interest rate is, let's say that fix and flip deal we talk about, let's say it's 2 points and 8.9% annual rate of interest. But let's say that property sells in 6 months. Are you charging them the full year's interest? I've seen a lot of notes structured where they still try to charge the full year. No?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's hard. We don't charge a prepayment penalty for that type of loan. Fix and flip, if you paid us off in a month, it'd still be 1 month interest. That's mm-hmm. it.
Okay. One other thing I wanted to get at is just the relationship of a broker, having a broker involved. I think that's a lot of services you guys sometimes do. You've mentioned that a couple times. You know, it's funny. I was at a conference with one of my larger clients, and as I'm sitting next to him, I actually do put some money of my own for my own retirement account in some of his essentially hard money lending deals. And as he's sitting there on his phone, he's every hour or so, he gets a deal emailed to him. And he's just got, he's worked 40 years in the real estate industry. So he's got, everybody knows him where he's at, and he's just got a deal flow. And so he can be choosy like that. You want to do this one? Are you interested in this one? You want to come in on this one? And that is very, very, very valuable to have that type of deal flow. And I think that's someone, you know, maybe I know Bruce, you're in probably a similar situation where you get a lot of that deal flow and you can pick the good ones out of the bad ones. And so tell me what you do when you're looking at it as a broker and what makes a good deal, as you're analyzing it for yourself or for someone else you're helping.
I want to see somebody that has an experience level that's equal to whatever they're trying to take on. So we have situations where guys actually tied up a good deal. He bought it. Mm-hmm. He's bought it really well. The problem is it needs a foundation. And how many have you done? This is the first one.
Yeah.
That's a bad idea. Can you get your deposit back? Because I don't want you cutting your teeth on people's money that is entrusted to me. And I don't want you to think you're going to be able to run through that project and get to the finish line without getting a hard bump. Or, you know, it's a coastal property and we're buying it at half price, but it's got, you know, caissons and all that stuff and they're cracked and we have to replace all, you know, that's just a bad place to start. Or fire damaged house where it gets going to go through the permits and all that. If somebody doesn't have experience level to handle the project, we're going to pass because we don't want to go through that learning as we go. Now, if somebody comes with a fire damaged house, and we have funded one recently, and that's all we do. We've done hundreds of them. You made me feel a lot better. You're still going to have money in the deal, by the way.
Yeah.
But I feel better that you'll be able to handle this. Same with new construction. So really experience and money reserves, because I fixed and sold over 1,000 homes myself. When you go through a project, there's surprises. Very rarely are there positive. Like, look at this. It doesn't even need paint. No, that's not what happens.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Now let's maybe shift the conversation a little bit to the real estate market itself. You obviously, if you're a good hard money lender, you've got a pulse of the market. Cause just like you said, whether it's a coastal property, an inland property, what's going on and are they going to be able to turn this thing and make a profit? So, Matt and I have been anxious to ask you this golden question. Are we in a real estate bubble? Does Bruce Norris think we're in a real estate bubble?
No.
Wow. I did not expect you to say that.
Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of reasons why. Now, it's interesting. You can get to a a market that's going to have the end of a price boom. Okay, so we've had a decent price run, but we've had them before. So let's go back to like 74 to 80. Prices tripled in California. We went up three times.
Okay.
Wow. For about 4 years, we took a pause. So we went up about 5%, 6% in the next 5 years. So about 1% a year. We didn't have a price decline with unemployment almost 10%, interest rates at 15.5%, and foreclosures going up 1,000%. No price decline. And I just gave you those charts.
Wow.
So that's a head scratcher. Mm-hmm. Now, go to the 90s now. We went from 200K to 177 in about 6 years, just a very gradual decline. And we had less unemployment. Instead of almost 10, we had 8. Interest rates were not 15, they were 7.5. Foreclosures went up 1,000% again. And we had a gradual price decline. The difference was the mix of foreclosures that in the, what was for sale as a percentage of foreclosures in the market. In the 80s, we got to 27%. In the 90s, we got to 40%. And we just got crushed in price with interest rates at 5 or 4. And the reason is the foreclosure ratio got to 80% in 2009. 80% of what was for sale in California was a trustee sale property. 80% trustee sales to sales. So as somebody that looks into the future and says, what's next? I try to say, okay, what is the tipping point? What causes all this price damage? And I came up with, it's the mix of foreclosures. So what's the likelihood of us having an unbelievable amount of foreclosures in this next pause, downturn, or crash? It's virtually none, and here's why. For a long time, like 8 years, you've actually had to really qualify for loans. You've had to have down payments, and you've had to have really good FICO score and credit history. Unlike the early 2000s, we have not borrowed on variable rate loans. We've borrowed at fixed loans at 3 and 4%. For the first time in our history, when we've had a price run of a double, we have not extracted $1 of equity in credit lines, not a dollar. So we're sitting on this huge pile of equity with a fixed rate loan at 3 or 4%. The bulk of those buyers care about their credit and put money into the deal. I'd like to see how we're going to amass a great number of foreclosures, a tremendous percentage of the market turning into that. I just don't see it.
So if I can be so bold to say, it would take an external factor outside of the real estate industry to create a possible crash, which could be terrorism, could be the dollar, it could be some political ramification of some sort. That's good. But from internal real estate industry, you don't see it.
Don't see it. I mean, again, give me the scenario. We have 80% of the market foreclosures after the loan programs we put in place the last 8 years. Another factor, by the way, is how we dealt with foreclosures this time was very different. We got aggressive and started foreclosing, and we got killed in price. So as a buyer, I was buying properties at 20 cents on the lender dollar in 2009 because they were the only ones that could say yes to an offer at 80% off. They had to take it. That was the highest offer. Okay, well, when they realized, my gosh, we can't take a 80% discount on all of our loan portfolio to get out of this stuff, they were allowed for the first time to stop foreclosing. And they literally just said, let's make a deal. Well, all of those programs are really fresh in the memory of the borrower and the lender. So if you had another event that might actually create a lot of foreclosures, it just wouldn't happen. They'd go right back to let's make a deal. Let's don't have a foreclosure. I'm sure you realize these interest rates that they've put on these remade loans, you know, when they work it out, do a loan workout, it's 2%. You got a 600 grand loan at 2%. Somebody will take that over. Even if it's a negative equity position, they take it over.
Yeah.
You know, it's nothing per year for interest. So that's the reasoning. And by the way, I don't try to say, gosh, I really need this to happen, so let me find a path to get there.
Yeah.
That's not what I do, because I am protecting my own money, and I'm protecting tens of millions of dollars of investor money that believe in our trustees. So I really do have to try to figure out what's next.
Well, I think that's interesting. I'm sorry, Matt, I want to interject, is that that was very perceptive of you to say that you do have a vested interest in it not being a bubble.
You misconstrued what I said.
Do you want a bubble? No, you don't.
No, but I don't care. If that's the conclusion, then I would say it.
Yeah.
Like in 2006, every time we got a payoff, we gave the people the money back and said, we won't be using it for a few years because it's just not safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I
like it. Let me ask this about interest rates. I think this is something a lot of people watch, you know, and my goodness, CNBC and all the, you know, financial networks, they talk about it ad nauseum. I think as interest rates go up, that increases the price of home ownership. We've been seeing interest rates finally starting to rise, even though they've been very low still. Does that have an effect on the real estate market? I mean, it makes the cost to own the property more, you know, more people may be inclined to rent instead. Should we be so focused on interest rates?
Well, it's interesting. So in the 74 to 80s, we talked about prices tripling during that cycle. Interest rates double from 7.5 to 15.
Yeah, it seems like high interest rates are a good thing, yeah? That's an indication the market's good.
No, it's an indication that you have inflation, but it happened to inflate real estate as well. This time, I don't think the raising of interest rates to the extent that they're going to get to raise interest rates is going to be significant. You're going to have people get off of the fence that are waiting for something that starts with 3 this year. They'll probably end up buying before they see a 5. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a motivating factor as well.
I like it.
But I think longer term, and I'm not talking 10 years out or 5 years out, I'm talking a couple years out, raising short-term interest rates will do something called invert a bond yield curve. Usually when you do that, you have a recession. When you have a recession, you then lower the Fed fund rate 4 to 5 percentage points every time. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll have an inverted yield bond curve now in 2019 below 3%. So if you, in fact, take 4 to 5% off of that 3%, you're in negative interest rate territory. I really do think that when we have our next recession, you'll have a 30-year mortgage that starts with a 2.
Crazy. Okay, now with all this on the table, I want to bring it back to some basics again. I want to talk about two camps, if I could, if you'll indulge me. Let's talk about the hard money lender. Now, in light of this real estate market, not a bubble, strong market, and I have money, and I may not want to be in what you've taught me years ago was funny. Is you're like, Mark, I don't want to rent. I want to be the banker. I want to be the bank. And so if I'm an investor and I've got some money, I'd like to talk about some tips of how to get into the hard money, you know, realm. Of making money with that, of making interest on that money. And then I want to come back in just a moment after that and talk about those that might be, that are looking for hard money. What are some tips and some things they should be looking out for? But so first, if I may set the table there, so where we're headed, if you've got a new investor that's new to the hard money industry and they've got maybe $100,000 or $1 million or anywhere in between, what advice would you give them to get into this business?
I would do homework. I would meet with the people that own the businesses and find out how they made decisions. I would find out what their policies are.
You're talking about brokers. Okay.
Yeah.
Find a broker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't consider even putting my own money up individually without, I just don't think it's worth, first of all, the broker doesn't cost anything to the guy with the money. All the points are charged to the borrower. So it's not like you're saving a commission. You're not. It has nothing to do with commission. What you're doing is if you have money, you are putting it in the flow of somebody else's normal business that they've earned the right for their phone to go off, like you said, every hour because they've been in front of the market for 20 or 30 years. You're not going to have that customer call you day one or even year one. You're going to have the person that can't get a hard money lender to fund the loan. We just had one yesterday. It was very interesting. Guy wanted a construction loan. I went to go see the lot. Happens I'm building two houses within a quarter mile. He said he's worth 700 grand. He paid 250 for the lot. Trouble is his house isn't worth that. It's worth 250. So he way overpaid for the dirt, and he's been to every lender. He's been trying to get a loan for 9 months. You could have a private party on their own think, I'll buy all that stuff you just said. If I have a 700 grand house at the end of it and I've only lent you, you know, five, then we're good. No, you're not. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it just takes some experience. So that's what I would do. I would check out brokers who've been around for a while. And and I guess I would also stay away from pools. I don't like putting money in a pool because it takes away my process of decision. What if I don't want to loan on land personally? In a pool, you don't have a choice. The mix is what it is.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Okay. Now let's say, Matt, do you have follow up on that? Go ahead.
No. Yeah. I think that's great. I was going to say, I think a lot of people who I've seen of just clients who have been good hard money lenders, they use a broker, they use someone that has knowledge that helps them find their deals. Like that's me. I'm just being honest. That's me. I mean, I basically am using a broker, a client of mine that just has the deal flow that I mentioned and has the expertise, goes out and looks at the properties. He's a former builder. But on the other hand, I've seen a lot of clients who kind of transition from being real estate investors where they've done their own fix and flips, they've had rental properties, and they have a better idea of analyzing a property themselves, and they can have some success too. So I like what you said. You got to do your homework. You got to know the market. Or use a professional or a broker. But all right, let's talk about, as Mark said, what if I'm trying to find the hard money? How do I get the money? Show me the money.
Yeah. And what deals should I not be thinking of? Now, obviously, I already took the rental property out of the mix. But let's say I'm enamored with the Home Network TV shows and I want to go out and start fixing and flipping property. And I've got maybe 50 to 100 grand of my own money. And I'm going to go out and throw it down and look for a hard money lender to come in and give me money for 6 months so I can finish my fix and flip. Are they even approaching money properly? What would you say to someone? I know you give it a half day lecture on this, I know, but what would you talk off the cuff on?
You know, for me, as a borrower, first of all, I wouldn't want to put anybody's money in jeopardy. I guess that's the first thing I'd like to say is really be responsible when you borrow private money. That's someone's life. You know, long time it took them to save that. And, you know, there's somebody in California that's going to go to jail for 20 years because he misused people's funds and made several dozen people completely broke. So respect other people's money. And how I would look for hard money, I mean, for me, it's reliability as opposed to cost. I don't want to take time trying to be the lender. I don't want to chase money directly with people. I really want to go to a company that's established and prove myself to them, because you know what I want to do? I want to spend my time looking for the next project, not for the next person that's 300 grand that wants to lend me personally. I don't want to do that.
Again, your point's the same. Try to quit looking for the guy on the corner, find the established business on the street that's been doing lending, hard money lending.
For a couple of reasons, by the way. You adopt their team that protects you. Rick Solis was our appraiser for 15 years. I can't tell you how many times, you know, six times or more a year over the course of 15 years, where he came in and said, I would not put my own money in the trust deed. And here's why. That was the end of the loan. And we did a great service to the person that was going to borrow and go through an entire project only to lose money.
No, that's good.
He didn't have enough experience. So when you borrow money from a really established company, they protect you from making a screw up, and you know the money is there. You know, you don't have to get to day 30 of a 30-day closing and have some calls like we weren't able to place your loan yet. Can we have more time? You really can't afford that. Mm. So, gosh, it was way worth the access to the money. Whatever the fee was, I was happy, and I still would think that way today.
I love it.
I'd find the right team. Mm-hmm. I would love for them to go, gosh, you know what? Here's my first experience hard money lending. Everyone assumes that it was always there for investors. It wasn't. In the early 90s, I was going into auctions and buying 5 to 10 houses every auction. Not trustee sales, but auctions. So you have 400 houses go in 2 days, and I'd end up with 5 or 10 of them. Well, I ran out of cash and I needed to get a lender. So we door knocked lenders, and the lender that we ended up with lent to people that lived in their house in secondary position. That was their entire business model. And I said, okay, I'm buying these homes at a discount. What will you lend me? And they said, we'll lend you 65%. Well, I was buying these things at 40 or something around there. So they were actually giving me money back on the first two that I did. And I said, I want you to realize that you're paying me more back than I paid for the property. And the guy that was in front of me is just like, oh my gosh, I could tell there was some hesitancy, but they funded those loans. I made 6 payments in advance for both of those loans. And I think it dawned on them, oh my God, we are really dealing with somebody different here. And from that little act of saying, in good faith, I'm going to prepay you so I understand your side of the table, they gave me a credit letter of $1 million, and I could go to a HUD auction and buy responsibly, but I could still buy whatever good deals I found. And we had a relationship. You know, I was there. I even had their private lender call me and tell me they would lend to me directly, and I would save those 5 points. My first call was the guy that owned that business and said, that's the kind of guy you have in this trust deed. He wanted to go around you. I'm not interested in talking to him.
Mm-hmm. Man, what a good guy. You're just a good guy.
Well, that's just smart business. That isn't that's just smart business. I've got a guy that's going to give me $1 million credit line and knows what he's doing. And somebody's got 200 grand in his life and he's going to make me loans directly. Well, if you do that, then you know what? You don't deserve the other guy, in my opinion.
No.
Well, I think there's a lot of good points there. I think one of the first things you said early on in your comments there was basically have respect for other people's money. You know, if someone's putting their money into your deal, they've worked hard for that. And you need to have a level of respect for it. I think, you know, sometimes as an attorney, we see that as I'm drafting the documents and we're talking terms, and I can tell someone on the other end when they're really just not being respectful of other person's money, frankly, and when they aren't being respectful and you know, trying to treat it as that person's earned money. And yes, they're going to use it, but they're going to be respectful of it and treat it like, you know, they would a close family member's money in their deal.
Yeah. And Matt, just to follow up on that, and this is important, everybody listening today, there is a fine line between making a mistake as a fix and flipper and being accused of fraud or negligence. Because if you start screwing around with people's money and you borrow money from someone, I like what Bruce just said too, there's people going to jail every day or week or month. I know every week around America from taking money from investors that they call investors, which is a scary word. These are lenders and people that just start taking money from whoever. They disrespect it. They disrespect the process. And that fine line between fraud and just being an idiot is a fine line. And you're going to jail. So I liked your example too, Bruce, that it's a serious matter when you take other people's money. You gotta be legit.
You know, and it's a progression that's very natural. So let's say you have somebody come in here for the first time at the Norris Group, and they've got $5 million and they're going to put up 300 grand on a property. First time to do a loan with my company, are they going to go see the property? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Fast forward 6 months, we've done 5 other deals. Are they now going to see the property? Probably not. 2 years later, are they ever going to go see the property? No. So it's a progression of freedom because you've earned the right. Unfortunately, sometimes that's breached. So after you've got complete freedom with somebody, all of a sudden, without them knowing it, you're putting them in not attached to the property loans, and they think they are. Mm. That kind of nonsense. Yeah. And maybe even you have really good intent. Okay, I don't have equity there, but I'm going to do it over here. And all of a sudden you've got a Ponzi scheme on your hand that you didn't intend, but you don't know how to unravel.
Yeah. And the shell game starts. That.
Yep.
Well, I want to say this, maybe as we head to summer here, the Norris Group, they're legit. I love Bruce, what you do. Is your son still work with you?
Oh man. Aaron is, he's doing great things, and you know, everything that looks good on the website, all the printed stuff and things I get to teach off of, that's all him, man.
Oh,
so now my oldest son, who is Greg, who had flipped 700 properties in the last 7-8 years. He's actually retired. He's going to law school.
Oh, and what happened to him? He lost.
Oh, no,
he
just, don't say.
He just lives off his rental income.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, he's just doing it for fun, huh?
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe that's okay. You're just doing it for self-inflicting pain.
Yeah.
Well, he may have a one of those awakening moments. He may call me back up and say, you know what? I think we ought to flip properties again.
Yeah. No. Well. Excellent. We're so glad you're here. The Norris Group. Check it out, people. Either you're borrowing, you got to get to their group, or you want to lend, get to their group. He's the middleman. He's the broker. He does it right. Matt, you were going to say something too. I think I saw you there.
No, I was just going to say thanks so much, Bruce. And this is the Norris Group. Bruce, what's the website? Is it thenorrisgroup.com or what? Where do they go?
Yes, thenorrisgroup.com.
Okay. All right.
Lots of free information, including 9 years of interviews with, you know, people at the top of the real estate chain.
All right. And Aaron gets the website credits.
That's right.
That's right. Okay. Well, thanks again for taking time out of your busy schedule. We know you speak all over and you travel quite a bit. Thanks for being with us. And everybody, thank you for sticking with a very complex topic, because I know there's important takeaways there. If you are in the real estate business, you've got to know how hard money works. And so thanks for listening this week, and we'll be back next week. I think open forum next week. So for anybody out there that has questions in the real estate tax legal world, we would love to give it a shot. And so we'll be sending out our newsletter on Tuesday with the link to either email in questions or to call in live next week for the open forum show. So it's a lot of fun. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's eBooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.